Well, if you've got your Bibles out, go ahead and open them up to Hosea chapter 12, the reading that we just had, Hosea chapter 12. And then once you're at Hosea chapter 12, put a marker there and go ahead and turn over to Genesis chapter 32. We'll be flipping back and forth a couple of times between those two this morning. Thank you all for being here. It is always so wonderful to be together with people who are interested in spiritual things, who desire to worship God together. If you're visiting with us, we're so thankful that you're here. We hope that you've been encouraged by our time this morning, and we hope that you'll stick around a little while afterwards so that we can have a chance to get to know you a little bit better. If you're at Genesis chapter 32, we're going to begin reading in verse 24 a really interesting story here. And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Whenever I read a book or watch a movie or a TV show, one of the things that I like to do is look for the relatable character. You know the kind of character. It's the character that you can really put yourself in their shoes. You can understand the difficult decision-making process that they had to go through or why they did what they did. And any relatable character in any good piece of literature is somebody who's flawed. And one of the reasons that we like those kind of characters is because being human beings, we're flawed too. And so we want to find somebody that we can relate to in any piece of literature. The Bible's full of relatable characters. I think about the disciples of Jesus. You've got these 12 men who spent so much time with Jesus, so much time listening to him teach, listening to him talk. You would think if anybody would understand what he was talking about, if anybody would get what he was saying, it would be these 12 men. And yet, as we read through their story, what we find is that these 12 men so often just fail to get it, fail to grasp exactly what Jesus is talking about. And if I'm being honest with myself, if I was in their shoes, I'm not sure I would have gotten it either. I'm not sure I would have understood fully what Jesus was trying to say. We think about Peter. Peter, one of the disciples, this is a guy that's hot-headed, he's impetuous. Oftentimes he acts and he speaks without thinking. And I think about myself, absolutely. I see times in my life where I've spoken without thinking or acted without thinking. In the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, the main character of our story here in Genesis chapter 32 is a man named Jacob. And I think Jacob is a relatable character, though as I read through his story, I kind of wish he wasn't quite as relatable as he is. But this story where we find Jacob, this relatable character, is really, I think, a pivotal moment in the life of Jacob. It is a defining moment in his life, because from this moment on, he is a changed man. He is a marked man. And I think as we work through this story this morning, I think we will see just how relatable he is, but just how defining of a moment this was in his life. And so I think if we're going to understand this story as being a defining moment in Jacob's life, we need to take a look back at the story of Jacob as a whole and understand what has characterized Jacob up to this point. What has this man been like? And I think the overarching way that we can describe Jacob is that he was a man who was wrestling with God. In fact, that's exactly what Hosea chapter 12 and verse 3 says. Hosea chapter 12 and verse 3, "In the womb he took his brother by the heel, and in his manhood he strove with God." I really like Hosea chapter 12 because it gives us a little more insight into the story of Jacob. But you see what it says there? It says that in his manhood, he strove with God. This is a man that's been wrestling with God throughout his life. So think about some of the stories of Jacob leading up to this moment here in Genesis chapter 32. First of all, in Genesis chapter 25, we have the story of Jacob being born. And you remember, Jacob is born clinging to the heel of his brother Esau, which is why he gets the name Jacob to begin with, which means he who follows closely or is the planter. And as we read through his story, we find out his name really fits him. Because in the very next text in Genesis chapter 25, we read about Jacob being a supplanter, don't we? You remember the story. Esau's out in the field and he comes in and his brother Jacob is making a pot of stew. And he says, "Give me some of the stew because I'm about to die. I'm starving." And Jacob says, "Well, I'll give you some stew, but it's going to cost you." And so Jacob uses deceit and manipulation to steal from his brother the birthright, which was something that should have been prized by Esau, something that Esau should not have wanted to let go. And yet Jacob takes it from him because he understands his brother's weakness and he uses it to get what he wants. And so I think under this overarching idea of Jacob being a man who wrestles with God, we also see somebody who's a schemer, a manipulator, and a deceiver. And sometimes Jacob's not alone in his deception. Sometimes he gets a little help on the way. I think about Genesis chapter 27. You remember the story there where Rebekah overhears that Isaac is going to give something else of great importance to Esau, which is the blessing. And Rebekah runs to Jacob and she says, "You need to get this blessing." Now, what's interesting about that is that Rebekah should have known better. You think about what is said to Rebekah back right before Jacob and Esau are born in chapter 25 and verse 23. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb and two peoples from within. You shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger." Rebekah has a promise from God that the younger is going to be greater than the older, that the older is going to serve the younger. And yet, for whatever reason here, she feels like she needs to take matters into her own hands and help Jacob get this blessing. God didn't need her help in fulfilling his promise. He didn't need Jacob's help in fulfilling his promise. And yet we see them doing what we often see Jacob doing, taking matters into his own hands. And so Jacob follows the plan to perfection. He sees that his father is weak. He's old of age. He can't see very well. And he takes advantage of his old age. And he steals something else of great importance from Esau. He steals the blessing. Now, as often happens when we take matters into our own hands and we practice deceit and manipulation, the consequences are pretty severe to Jacob and Rebekah. Because when Esau finds out that something else has been taken from him, and he finds out that it's Jacob again who has taken something from him, the text tells us in Genesis 27 and verse 41, "So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing which with his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, 'The days of mourning for my father are near, then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" My father's old, and when he dies, Jacob dies. So Jacob has nothing left to do but to run away. He has to leave his home. Not only that, Rebekah loses her favorite son. Their contact is essentially cut off. The consequences of what they do is great. And so I hope we can kind of see, moving on, how relatable of a character Jacob is, because he really is a man who is wrestling with God. I mean, think about it. As we go through the rest of Jacob's story, what we see is a man who only occasionally acknowledges the power and the providence of God in his life. He does it a few times. But when he does acknowledge the power and the providence of God in his life, he almost always immediately follows it up by trying to solve his own problems through schemes and manipulation and through deceit. For example, in Genesis chapter 31, Jacob is talking to his family, and beginning in verse 6, it says, "You know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not permit him to harm me. And he said, if he said, the spotted shall be your wages, and all the flock bore spotted, and if he said, the striped shall be your wages, and all the flock bore striped, thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me." You see what Jacob does here? He acknowledges that God has been at work in his life. He acknowledges that God is protecting him and God is providing for him. He clearly acknowledges this. And so you would think from this moment on, Jacob realizes what God's done for him and he trusts God. And he trusts God to protect him and to take care of him. What happens in the very next chapter? The very next chapter, in chapter 32, Jacob is faced with the prospect of seeing his brother Esau again, the brother that wants to kill him. And what does Jacob do? I'll tell you what he doesn't do. He doesn't look to God and say, "Look, you've gotten me through all of these other struggles in my life. You have protected me. You provided for me. The reason I have everything that I have is because of you." No, he begins to scheme again. He comes up with this plan on how he's going to protect his family, protect himself. He doesn't show any trust in God from what we can see. And this comes right after saying, "God's the reason I have what I have." And that's why I say that Jacob's story can be characterized as a man who's wrestling with God. Because he is a man who understands God's powerful. He understands God's been working in his life, but he is loath to give up control. And he is loath to put his trust fully in God. This is a man who has more confidence in himself and his abilities than he does in the God he's seen the power of in his own life. His will is locked in battle with the will of God. And that's why I say that Jacob's such a relatable character. Because just as Jacob struggles to submit his will to God and to put his trust in God, don't we do that? Don't we struggle to submit our will to God? We struggle to submit our wills to God even when we can see the evidence of his providence and his protection in our lives. We're not that different than Jacob all too often. So Jacob is a man who's been wrestling with God almost his entire life. And all of that comes to a head here in Genesis chapter 32. Here in Genesis chapter 32, where we see the physical manifestation of this wrestling match that's been going on between God and Jacob. Verse 24 says, "And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day." Jacob at this point is already starting to enact his plan to protect his family from his brother Esau. So he sent them across the river, and the text tells us that Jacob is alone. I don't know exactly why the text tells us that Jacob is alone. I wonder if maybe it's because it's trying to tell us that this is what happens when you try and do things on your own without God's help. You are totally and utterly alone. Jacob's alone on this side of the river. And it tells us that a man comes to wrestle with him. And I think the order of the words there is really interesting and really important, because I think it gives us a clue as to who initiates this wrestling match. It says a man wrestled with Jacob, not the other way around. And so I think it's meant to tell us that this man, whoever it is, has come to initiate a wrestling match with Jacob. And so the natural question is then, who is this man? Who is this person that just randomly pops up out of the blue and starts fighting with Jacob? And I think the Bible gives us a few clues. First of all, Jacob in verse 30 seems to think that he's wrestled with God, because he says in verse 30, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." And if you flip back over to Hosea chapter 12 and verse 4, We get another clue. It says he strove with the angel. And so I think what we have here in this text is that Jacob is wrestling with an angel that was sent by God. He's wrestling with an angel that was sent by God. God is initiating this wrestling match. Now, there's something remarkable in this. It is so fascinating to me that God sends an angel to seek out a wrestling match with Jacob. And what amazes me is that God has not given up on Jacob. I think that's what this tells us. God has not given up on Jacob. God has been seeking Jacob to submit his will to him for his whole life. He has been seeking for him to put his trust in him for his whole life. And he hasn't said up to this point, you know what? I'm done. I've been trying for so long with you, Jacob, and you just aren't getting it. So I'm done. Now what God does is he sends an angel to wrestle with Jacob. Because he wants to teach Jacob. And I'll tell you right now, I am so thankful that God hasn't looked at me and said, you know what, you've made too many mistakes in your life. I'm done. I'm through. God wants Jacob to give himself over, and so he challenges him. God has allowed Jacob to endure some struggle and some hardship in his life, but he's mixed that struggle with his protection and with his provision because he wants Jacob to see, you can trust me. You can trust me. You can put all of your faith in me because I have your good at heart. I've protected you. I've provided for you even when you're going through the struggles that you've gone through. And God does the same thing for us. It shouldn't be shocking to any of us that we go through struggles in our lives. It isn't shocking that we have hard times in our lives, but all too often our response to those struggles is, why is God letting this happen to me? Why am I suffering? Does God care about me? And I'll tell you right now, God cared about you so much that he sent his son to die on a cross. So that when you do go through those struggles and when you do go through those hardships, you can endure because you have the hope of salvation. And you can endure because you can have confidence that you can put all of your trust in him because he has your good at heart. That's what God does for us. That's what God does for Jacob here. He sends an angel to wrestle with him because he cares about Jacob. And he cares so much that Jacob trusts in him. I just think that's so amazing. The next few verses in the story are a little challenging to understand. Verse 25 says, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket. And Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day is broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Jacob and this man are locked in combat throughout the night, right up until dawn. And the man realizes that he isn't making any headway. And so the text tells us that he touches Jacob's hip socket and it goes out of joint. Now, I've never personally had a joint go out of socket, but I've seen it happen. When I was in school down at Florida College, I'm probably not supposed to tell you this, but every couple of nights throughout the year, the guys would have in the dormitory what was called fight night. And I never participated. I was not big enough to do that. But there were a lot of people who participated, and I remember one wrestling match where this one guy picked another one up and he slammed him on the ground and his shoulder just went right out of socket. He was in agony. He was laying there on the floor. He could barely move. He was rolling a little bit. And he had to stay there until he could muster enough strength to have people help him get up to go get it taken care of. He's in agony. I've never had it happen, but I imagine that the pain is incredible. Well, this is what happens to Jacob here. As he's wrestling with this man, the man touches his hip. His hip is put out of socket. And I have to imagine that he was in an intense amount of pain here. And so realistically, Jacob at this point has been put out of commission. He can't physically win this wrestling match with this angel. And if you think about this being an angel sent from God, ultimately he can't win this physical wrestling match anyway. But what we're told is that he clings to the man. He doesn't let go. That's all that Jacob can do at this point. He's holding on to this angel. And he holds on so fiercely that in verse 26, the man says, "Let me go. The dawn is breaking." And Jacob won't let him go. He says, "I'll only let you go if you bless me." I wonder, and I think it's likely, it's at the moment where this man touched his hip that Jacob realized he wasn't wrestling against just any old man. Because Jacob here is clinging to him and he asks for a blessing. And what does the man respond to him? He says, "What's your name?" I think that's really interesting. What is your name? And I think what's interesting about that is that names in the Old Testament have a lot of meaning. We've already talked about the meaning of Jacob's name, supplanter, and how it fit him. And I wonder if in this moment this man is forcing Jacob to face who he is. Face who he is. Say, "What's your name?" "My name's Jacob. I'm a supplanter. This is who I am." And this angel says, "You're not going to go by Jacob anymore. I'm changing your name to Israel. Because you have striven with God and man and have prevailed." So the question is then, how did Jacob prevail? How does Jacob prevail here? He's basically been put out of commission. His socket, his hip has been put out of joint. All he can do is hold on. Well, I want to suggest to you this. Back over in Hosea chapter 12 and verse 4, I think it gives us a little insight into this story. Hosea chapter 12 and verse 4, "He strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor." I think the reality of this story is that Jacob lost this wrestling match. But at the same time, he prevailed. I think Jacob prevailed. Jacob won because he finally weeps and seeks the favor of God. He finally loses. He loses himself. I think that finally Jacob begins to understand that he cannot in any way, shape, or form ultimately win out over God. And so Jacob prevails here in the truest sense of all. He prevails because he finally loses. He loses himself and he gives up to God. He seeks a blessing and a favor from God with weeping, clinging to him. And what's amazing is that God responds to him. And he changes Jacob's name and he helps Jacob become a new person by helping him let go of who he was and to become Israel. Doesn't that sound like us? We spend so much of our lives wrestling with God. We spend so much of our lives refusing to give up our wills to him. And when we go through struggles, I think we have to see the providence and protection of God working in our lives. And we have to understand that the only way we can win, the only way we can prevail, is to lose. To finally give up our wills to the all-powerful God, with weeping, seeking the favor of God. And I think you can trust that God will respond to you. Well, the story closes out in verse 29. And I think it's a fitting way that the story ends. It says, then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Jacob asks the man's name, but it's refused to him. And the man blesses him. And Jacob calls the place Peniel. But it is particularly verse 31 that I want you to notice, because it says that Jacob walks away limping. The reality of this story is that Jacob is a changed man. And I think he's a marked man. It doesn't mean that he's not going to struggle with submitting his will to God. We see him struggle again through his life with submitting his will to God. But he's a changed man from this moment on. Certainly, now he knows who's on his side. Now he knows who he can put his trust in. Think about Genesis chapter 35 and verse 3. Then let us arise and go up to Bethel, so that I may make there an altar to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone. That sounds like a changed man, doesn't it? Or chapter 33 and verse 5. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, who are these with you? Jacob said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. This is right after this story in chapter 32. He knows who's on his side. He knows he can put his trust in God. God has changed him. And he's changed his name. And the reminder of that is a limp. Jacob has a limp. I love this quote by John Fokelman. It says, the old man has been shaken off. Jacob stays behind on one bank of the river, a new man, steeled and marked. Israel has developed and continues the journey on the other bank. I hope all of us understand that we too are changed and marked when we finally submit our wills to God. When we finally understand that he has been seeking our submission by mixing our struggle with his protection and his provision, we are changed. When we go down in the waters of baptism, the old man dies, and a new man walks on the other bank. We're marked with the blood of Jesus Christ, just like Jacob was marked with a limp. The old man must die and the new one must continue the journey. I think this is such a powerful story in the life of Jacob. Jacob is such a relatable character, and like I said, sometimes I wish he wasn't, but he is. But in this instant, I'm glad he's relatable, because I can see how my life too can be changed and marked when I submit myself to God. And I think this story teaches us about a God that is seeking us and wants us to give up our selfish wills so that he can bless us richly beyond our wildest imaginations. If you're not a child of God this morning, you need to understand your situation. You're a rebel against your Creator, but he's seeking you and he desires that you give yourself over to him, that you put all of your trust in him, that you become a changed person. That's his desire for you. That's our desire for you. And we want to help you do that this morning. And if you are a child of God, like we talked about, Jacob still struggled after this event. And we sometimes still struggle, even after giving ourselves over to God. And if you're in that situation this morning, we want to help you however we can, whether it's by studying with you, praying with you, whatever it might be, we want to help you. If you have any need this morning, please come forward as we stand and sing together.